Welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Today is Wednesday. We always jokingly say that Wednesdays are big news days. Today is, although not for reasons that we would prefer. But that said, Jer Jackson, it is still a day of the news, and so we are going to talk about everything. How are you doing?
Well, I can't complain, I suppose. But as we go further and further through this, I'm going to find some ways to complain.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. Sometimes you need some meditation balls. You guys remember these things? It's like such a 90s high school thing.
I do.
Remember?
I had a thing. I had it. It was in a little case, like a soft material. Yeah. I
wonder where that went. You mean like this? Telling you, bro. Everybody
exactly
had
things like that. Yes. You ever wonder where your things went? I don't know. Well, I had so many things. Anyway, are you guys helping today?
The problem that is, John, I don't wonder where my things went because I hoard things and I never lose where they went because they always stay with me. I'm gonna need these to chill out today once we get to Steven Crowder.
Yeah. So the theme of the day is racism. That's because it probably should be every day, because every day we do broadcast from America. So we're gonna talk about a couple of different ways that racism is affecting our politics. In the pre-show, we talked about the right wing's coverage of the border and how supposedly it was this major crisis that migrants were bringing COVID across the border. Of course, Fox also tells me that COVID's not a big deal, so I don't know why that would be a problem. So anyway, racism is pretty much everywhere, so that's going to be fun. We're of course going to be talking about the string of murders in Atlanta. We are going to give Trump a bit of credit in response to something he said on Fox News. So that's going to be weird, but don't worry, we'll take it back. Really soon after that, updates on the filibuster, on Justice Kavanaugh, and more besides. So you're definitely not going to want to miss it. Thank you everybody for being here. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already. If you send us messages and everything, we will respond. Super chats, all that. Yeah, today's just going to be, you know, kind of a down day. There's days that suck in American politics, and we're not going to lie to you. We'll see. I'm sure at some point we'll have a little bit of fun. It's going to take a bit, that's all. So anyway, with that, JR, you want to jump into this? JR, I believe we might have lost your audio.
Oh, there I am.
There we go. See, I always ask the guests if they're ready to start, and it's almost always not necessary, but they're just bit off. Anyway, let's do this. Okay. Regardless of whatever is in the news right now or comes out through the course of today, yesterday in Atlanta, there was a string of murders that were 100% motivated by racism. I don't care what the cops say to cover for this person or what Fox News says through the course of the day. That is what motivated just the most recent horrible string of anti-Asian violence. We've already been seeing it in America for century or two, but it's been especially bad over the past year. And yesterday it reached what I hope is the worst, the most critical moment in America's most recent flare up of racism against Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. So we had shootings at two massage parlors in Atlanta and one in the suburbs Tuesday evening that left 8 people dead, many of them women of Asian descent. I've heard that 6 of the 8 were women of Asian descent. A 21-year-old man suspected in the shootings was taken into custody in Southwest Georgia hours later after a manhunt. Now we're gonna give you facts about what happened and obviously a lot of analysis, but along the way, as we sort of did with the intro, I want to make sure that we get out in front of some of the ridiculous, like, squirrel moments in American politics when terrorism happens. So right there, we very carefully said it's a 21-year-old man. You might have heard that it's a 21-year-old child. And I swear to God, that is something that is going around. And as soon as you hear that it's a 21-year-old child, you already know what the race of the terrorist is, because nobody else gets to be a child at 21 than a white male after they've killed some people. So basic details. The attacks began around 5 p.m. when 5 people were shot at Young's Asian Massage Parlor in a strip mall near a rural area in Acworth, about 30 miles north of Atlanta. 2 people died at the scene and 3 were transported to a hospital where 2 of them also died. Around 5:50 p.m., police in the Buckhead neighborhood of Atlanta, responding to a call of a robbery in progress, found 3 women dead from apparent gunshot wounds at Gold Spa. While they were at that scene, they learned of a call reporting shots fired at another spa across the street. aromatherapy spa and found a woman who appeared to have been shot dead inside the business. We have comments from a number of different sources. We're going to start with one that seems not 100% contradictory to literally everything we know about racialized violence in America. This is coming from Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms, who said, "A motive is still not clear, but a crime against any community is a crime against us all." Now, a lot of the other official communication around this is the worst. So we're going to start with a little bit of that. Here is one of the sheriffs involved in this case talking a bit about what they know at this point.
So the suspect did take responsibility for the shootings. He said that early on once we began the interviews with him. He claims that these, and as the chief said, this is still early, but he does claim that it was not racially motivated. He apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex conviction, and sees these locations as something that allows him to go to these places, and it's a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate. Like I said, it's still early on, but those were comments that he made.
Did he discuss any kind of religious motivation for this, or was he responsible?
Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of.
Or political.
Non-political. I've heard nothing about politics. He understood the gravity of it, and he was pretty much fed up and kind of at the end of his rope. And yesterday was a really bad day for him, and this is what he did.
Remorseful?
I'm not going to go to. I don't know if he was remorseful or not.
Okay. So JR, that was a lot of. I don't know that particular sheriff. I don't know that sheriff's politics or what they've said about any other case or anything like that. I will say that was a lot of attempt at understanding and empathy for the white male terrorist that, hey, what do you know? They took him alive.
Yeah, after a chase and a manhunt and whatever else that they described it as. I felt what seems to be a lot of care and concern and caution in making sure that they don't sound wrong after everything else they figure out goes through the process. I'm not sure what they're afraid of. I'm not sure what kind of pushback usually may have happened with something like this, but they definitely seem like they're afraid to come forward with what they are seeing that it happened, maybe potential motivations. Even if he has some sexual deviancy that he looked to try to eliminate by murdering 8 people, why that sexual deviancy, and how would that possibly eliminate his issue? After an initial, I guess, interview and talking to the guy, you're going to try and determine what he's going to say. But let's remember now, how many racists are going to come and say to you, yeah, it was totally racially motivated. Yep, I do it all the time. You know, I couldn't wait just because all I think about is racially motivated attacks. Who says that? Who says it? So if they don't say it, the response being, there's no indication of any racial motivation. He said so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So does Donald Trump.
Yeah, and look, the debate that's going to be had about whether this is racist, I want to turn to that in one sec. Really fast though, that maybe the fifth worst part of what we just saw was he had a really bad day. If I was that sheriff, I would have said he had a really bad day. Wait, what am I talking about? What am I talking about? He literally just killed a bunch of people. I don't give a damn what his day is like. It's not a justification for literally any kind of violence, let alone a string of racist murders. And even if it was in some way, it wouldn't be my job as a cop to run PR for this killer.
Right.
Maybe that would have repaired a little bit of that. But anyway, maybe we'll hear more from the sheriff in the future. I don't know. So those are the basics. We're talking about the Atlanta shootings. Let's talk about the race component, because we watched this video that's available talking about how it's not motivated by racism. I mean, he went to a bunch of spas where women of Asian descent worked and he murdered them. And I don't know what he would have had to say to the cops for it to count as racist or a hate crime for them. You know, there was some great commentary from, one of the people we bring on for commentary on legal matters, Adrian Lawrence, who said, if to punish a crime as a hate crime requires the assailant use racial epithets, what's the point in having a hate crime statute? This is nonsense. She goes on to say, the suspect claims he targeted the Asian spas because he has an issue with porn and was taking out places of temptation. Basically, the suspect is telling law enforcement that he's hypersexualizing Asian women establishments. How is that not racially motivated? And I want to add a couple of other great comments to that. One from Minha Pham, who said he didn't have a sexual addiction. He had racist sexualized fantasies about dominating Asian women. In other words, he had fantasies of white supremacy and acted on them. Name it. And Millie Tran, who said, as if these things aren't related and based on centuries of sexualized and submissive stereotypes of Asian women, white supremacy is rooted in misogyny and racism. Like everything that he has said, and it doesn't matter what he says. Let's be very clear about that. The killer doesn't get to decide if it was a hate crime or not. But even if it was up to him, he's making the case that it was 100% based on the sort of misogyny and anti-Asian racism that we know exists. And that some, like, ideally American society would like to change a little bit on, but let's not forget that America just spent 2 weeks talking about how it's insane to want children to be exposed to a little bit less racist imagery about Asians. The biggest cable news network just spent 2 weeks saying, no, kids need to see racism against Asians. And I worry that that's gonna be lost a little bit in this, but I mean, JR, this is racism. That's a hate crime. He wanted to kill Asian women. That's what he did.
This is the thing. By the way, this murderer doesn't have to know that his motivations were based in his racist motivations and his white supremacy and his misogyny and his linking this to Asian women and his sexual deviancy, as he called it. So he doesn't have to be the one to know it, even if he's not covering it up because he's trying to get away with it in whatever way that people may think we're claiming he is. It's actually an indictment on our society that this is so normalized, this hypersexualization of Asian women, massage parlors. Oh my God, that's where I can go get my rocks off. The fact that that's such a normalized thing feeds into people's mindsets like this guy, who think it's okay to then let me eliminate my issue with my porn addiction and my massage parlor fantasies, and let me go kill some people. Because it doesn't have to be someone directing him, hey, go do that on March 16th. And go make sure this happens. Doesn't have to be the directive that makes sure someone does this or that even leads them down that road. It's why you have to be careful about the things you say, the way that you perpetuate stereotypes, and the way you talk about other folks. You know, the kind of folks that when we bring up an issue in our conversations, and then you get, oh, stop being such a snowflake. Oh, it's just a joke. Oh, that always used to be fine. Hey, well, what about, you know, so anytime there's excuses for why people want to make sure you don't do things and say things a certain way that disparages an entire group of people that you don't know, it's because it can lead to people thinking they can do whatever they want to those folks. It happens with the homeless. It happens with every minority. There's been every kind of stereotype for every minority that's ever been in this country. And that always leads to violence, because if you downplay someone's existence as just your sexual deviancy, you can kill it. It's just about me anyway. It's about protecting me. Oh my God, I have a sexual deviancy. And you detach from the fact that your sexual deviancy is connected to human beings that you don't know. And you can kill them because who cares? It's about me.
Yeah. I mean, are we supposed to be surprised that in a country that is like equal parts guns and racism and, you know, undiagnosed and untreated mental illness, that if the most powerful and influential people in politics and media yell at America for a year that Asian people are responsible for all of the bad stuff that's happening, even though they then turn and say that it's not that bad and it's being exaggerated. But when they're focused on the racism, it's bad, that hate crimes happen. And that this most recent spate of racist murders happens, but that comes after a ton of killings that we've talked about previously, a full year of a massive uptick in harassment. I don't think that we can be particularly surprised by that. And as if to make the point, we have Donald Trump, who of course spent the past year trying to distract from his own massive failures on COVID by pretending that it's all China's fault. And so it's not just that he spent a year doing that. Literally last night on Fox News, this is what he had to say.
As I call it, the China virus, COVID.
Yeah, we know what COVID is. Yeah, we've been in this pandemic for a year now. We know what it is. But for him, the only important thing is that you know that it came from China and that you focus on China and the Chinese. And that honestly, what he said is less explicitly racist than most of the other nicknames. They're not just Donald Trump, but other members of his administration, as well as right-wing pundits who know that it's very easy in America to convert, you know, racism into crowdfunding and stuff like that. They spent the past year trying to get people worked up to hate Asians, and this has happened. And, yeah, and it's totally fine, totally legal, JR. They can just do that.
By the way, it doesn't have to be connected to anything with COVID in the way that Trump talks about China flu and Kung flu and all the things that these guys that were trying to push, by the way, they were just trying to push the responsibility of our response on the origins of the virus, right? Just because you've normalized these terms for certain people that follow you, or people that don't follow you, that just hear you, just because you normalize those terms in this case doesn't mean it doesn't transfer over in them being lesser human beings in another case. No, this guy may have had absolutely nothing, no thoughts about COVID and connecting it, but he did have in his head the way that we've been talking about and treating Asian Americans is just based off of this other issue. These things can be connected without someone directly saying, oh man, I went in that massage parlor and I went to kill a bunch of Asian folks because Donald Trump told me that the COVID is actually Kung flu and it came from China and all that stuff. It doesn't have to be all of that.
Yeah.
It's just enough of a seed is in your head and you don't have to value someone's life enough because we've downplayed them to this degree that you can then take it and use it for your own means in any way.
Exactly. Yeah, it doesn't have to be connected. I don't even know that it necessarily matters. It's like, yes, this is a very specific strain of racism that's been encouraged, but it also takes place in America, where that's hardly a new thing. I mean, there has been racism and discrimination against Asian Americans for as long as and before there was an America. So is it directly connected to the most, like the very recent, very like explicit racism, or is it just the natural thing that would bubble up when you live in a country that's effectively a swamp of xenophobias, racisms, fears, suspicions, lusts, all of that? I don't know. Both are bad, and we should probably deal with both. But what is more likely to happen is we're going to have a pointless, counterproductive conversation today about whether it was racist. All of the racists, I think, are going to land on it wasn't racist, and they're going to broadcast all day on Fox News. And do you seriously think that Tucker Carlson isn't going to do a segment tonight about how anti-Asian racism doesn't exist? Like, is he really going to pass up this opportunity? This is a month that we're supposed to be sort of recognizing the contributions of women, and so far he's spent it attacking women and demonizing them, even service members. This was Asian women that were killed. You think he's not going to use that? He's 100% going to use that.
I look forward to see if this prediction comes together because I hadn't thought about that, and it seems like it makes the most sense in the world for that to be the next step for Tucker tonight, because also it gets you attention. Candace Owens is having fights with Cardi B on Twitter because she wants more attention. She's like, oh, there's attention on this song that we revitalized now because the Grammys just happened. Now we have an opportunity to get my name out there and talk more. She'll interact with me and engage, and then we'll fight, and then I get a promotion as far as like promoting herself to more people seeing her. That's really where all this kind of lands, you know? So you have your voice out there, make sure people hear, and then you get promoted. Who cares? It's money in appealing to the worst people in the country. And there's enough of them that it gets you some cash.
There's a ton, and they spend all their time watching Fox News and on Twitter. Yeah, he's not going to come out and say you should go and you should shoot up a massage parlor. He's never going to say anything that explicit. What he's going to say is, they're trying to police your thought by saying you can't call it China flu. They're saying that if you have problems with China, that you're not great. Why would they do that to you? Great patriots, you should stay. He'll do that because that's what they want to hear, and he will provide it to them. He will ask a bunch of dumb rhetorical questions. He will provide plausible deniability for racists. That is all that the program actually is. And all of his viewers will leave today not thinking, oh dear God, what have we unleashed on America? Maybe we should do something about this. These are like my fellow citizens, they deserve to live. No, they'll end with, yeah, I should be able to criticize China. Why do they stop me when I try to criticize China? That's what's gonna happen. That is his contribution to American culture, and you're gonna see it on display tonight.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un*** the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Donald Trump is back out there doing interviews again. He joined Maria Bartiromo yesterday. And he said something that I think is worth credit. A little briefly, take a look.
Mr. President, I know that you received the vaccine. Mrs. Trump also got the vaccine. Would you recommend to our audience that they get the vaccine then?
I would. I would recommend it. And I would recommend it to a lot of people that don't want to get it. And a lot of those people voted for me, frankly. But, you know, again, we have our freedoms and we have to live by that. And I agree with that also. But
okay, so it was a little bit undercut with the stupid freedom comments. But JR, he was asked if they should get the vaccine and he said they should get the vaccine.
Yeah. And he said they should get the vaccine. I don't know, man. Fine. Okay, cool. Just like when he finally knew that COVID is a reality. Oh, good.
Yeah. No, I know. But like, we need them to take the vaccine.
You're right. We don't need to downplay it. This is one of those moments where there's some validity to, if we get all upset about Trump finally saying this, that there's validity to people being frustrated by us never admitting any kind of progress on something. But I'm gonna go ahead and do that because he has to be asked the question. So
that's true.
Are you gonna and maybe even potentially before the interview said, I'm gonna ask you if we should do the vaccine, okay? Okay, Don. And then so they have to do it that way. So it was a bit of a having to be ushered in rather than having the initiative because you do care. You'll say things that you care about. You notice also in the middle of that answer, Trump also said of all the people who voted for me, he has to insert that some kind of way
true.
It means absolutely nothing because that's what matters to him. If it mattered to you that people were getting the vaccine, you would mention that a lot more. You'd mention it immediately. Yeah. In fact, you mentioned all the time when you were trying to get the Operation Warp Speed moving because that would benefit you. Once it doesn't benefit you anymore, you got to get it dragged out of me like pulling teeth. Okay, fine. The teeth were pulled. Okay, fine. The rotted tooth is gone. At least we're going to heal a little bit now. But you still have a gap in your mouth, bro.
I get it. It is possible, though, that some, perhaps a few hundred, perhaps a few thousand conservatives will get it and they won't get the disease and die. They won't pass it on to other people. That is good. Especially on Fox News, where they have, as predicted, turned hard against the vaccine. So he gets credit. And then he started lying a bunch. And I got to take it away because we can't have anything good. So here he is talking about the vaccine at more length.
You add the fact that I was the one and this administration was the one that came up with a vaccine, which is going to save the world. OK, it's going to save. We would be, I think, worse than 1917, where 50 to 100 million people died. The vaccine is such a big thing. When you add it all up, I think we'll do very well in 2 years. And I think we're going to do very well in 4 years.
Well, if you want to know if he views literally everything through a political lens and how it will benefit him, the fact that he talked about 2 years and 4 years pretty much sums that up right there.
Absolutely.
But I would remind you, he didn't come up with the vaccine. He wasn't like measuring liquids in beakers and stuff. They allocated some of our tax dollars. And as I always say, literally any president would have done that. That wasn't something he came up with. Hey, let's fund vaccine development. And by the way, even if you did, the first one that was approved didn't participate in Operation Warp Speed. They didn't take your money. They didn't need your money. They came up with it. They were always going to come up with it. It's a goddamn pandemic. It was an international priority, you idiot. But that said, he did tell people they should take it. So that's good.
Yeah, so that's all wrapped up. It's all good now. But in 2 years and 4 years is when it's actually going to be a normalized and effective thing that we needed. Right now, it doesn't really matter because someone else might get credit for it. Honestly, anybody getting the vaccine or is getting through this whole thing and has survived this long, I'm not sure if they want to have it or give any credit to someone they never met before for the entire production and process of this whole thing. But sure, give it credit. Just give credit to help you out with your political aspirations. I don't know if it's hard to see, if it's just like something we only see because we listen to this guy and pay attention so closely. It's so hard to see that everything he talks about. There was a 20-second clip. He mentioned four different things about himself and his political aspirations in that answer. Four different times.
Well, maybe actually, Jared, let's play one more clip because it's going to play into what you're saying, that this is all about credit and like it's not about he could work as an ambassador to conservatives to get them to save their lives. But he'd have to work with Biden and he's not going to want to do that. And I think you'll understand why after watching this.
Biden failed very badly with the H1N1 with the, as you know, he had a chance to do something. And they had a tremendous, tremendous failure. H1N1. It was a disaster.
Who is like, yeah, he's right. That was bad. Recently, it's been good. But H1N1, that was a tough time for America. What conservative is spilling their beer and their Fritos over themselves? That's a great line, Trumpy. Thanks for reminding me of that. Clever move there. Who's actually doing that, JR?
Well, the natural follow-up question, because if I had to sit and listen to that, out of pure curiosity, the follow-up question, not being a gotcha, but it'd be like, oh, let's elaborate. What did Biden do with the H1N1 that was a disaster?
Who the hell knows?
Just wait. What's the answer? He's done it. He did it the whole time he was in office. And then you see what's going on with H1N1. And what about what's going on over there at the border? And what about what's happening? What is happening? What is it? Stop just saying, look at it. Look at what? What am I looking at? Someone just points in the far off distance in the wilderness and says, look at that. Like, well, man, I see trees. I see leaves. I see dirt. I see grass. What am I looking at? I'm looking at something. What is it, bro? Give me some details. He doesn't have any. All he needs to do is direct you to say, look what he did. I'm better than that. And when you give specifics about what he did, it's, oh, you guys, fake news. I'm so tired, bro.
I'm so tired. I'm tired too. We had one more video. Not playing it. Nope. We've been calling on President Biden to push for reform to the filibuster since he was inaugurated, and it has been a very slow path, and we are not quite there yet. But recently, he did have this to say about it.
So you're not likely to get Republican votes for the tax increase. You're not likely to get Republican votes for H.R. 1, expanding voting rights, or the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. So aren't you going to have to choose? I know you've been reluctant to do away with the filibuster. Aren't you going to have to choose between preserving the filibuster and advancing your agenda?
Yes. But here's the choice. I don't think you have to eliminate the filibuster. You have to do it what it used to be when I first got to the Senate and back in the old days when you used to be around there. And that is that a filibuster, you had to stand up and command the floor and you had to keep talking alone. You couldn't call for, you know, no one could say, you know, quorum call. Once you stopped talking, you lost that and someone could move in and say, I move the question of. So you got to work for the filibuster.
So you're for that reform. You're for bringing back the talking filibuster.
I am. That's what it was supposed to be. Look, I think, don't hold me to the numbers, George, but I think between 1960 and 2000, there were like, I'm making this number up, I don't know. There were like, 50 filibusters. Now they're like 200 since then, since that
rule changed. Just put a hold on it, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so the idea, it almost is getting to the point where there's, you know, democracy's having a hard time functioning.
Okay, JR, so he's not ready for it to be entirely eliminated, but he does say, sort of like Joe Manchin had been saying last week, that maybe making them actually filibuster would be a good thing for the filibuster. So that's progress, I guess.
Yeah. The fact that has to be even brought up as a thing to reform. Let's reform the filibuster back to being a filibuster rather than just a, hey, I don't want to do anything, or hey, I don't like that, so let me stop it. Because that's all it is. We got to put things in terms that folks just can hear and glom onto. Not dumb it down, not trying to say things like that, but just put it in normal terms that people see what's happening. Like, oh, they have to go through the procedural vote and then out of committee, and this, don't say any of that stuff. Republicans are utilizing a filibuster, and if you know what a filibuster is, you have to talk. They're not talking. They're just raising their hand and saying, I don't wanna. It's like kindergarten, and the kid doesn't want to take a nap when that's the rule right now. I don't wanna. And now everyone else has to stay up. My kid hated naps when he was in preschool, but he didn't run around and say, I don't wanna, and then roll around and make sure no one else does it. But that's how the filibuster works right now.
Yeah.
I don't wanna. So therefore, entire legislative process and agendas just get derailed because you just don't wanna. And the reason you don't wanna is because someone's paying you not to wanna. People have absolutely nothing to do with the actual process of American politics, man.
Man, I used to hate naps too. That used to be the stupidest thing about me because they're the absolute best. Although, man, I cannot wake up from a nap. I am unusable, like hours. But anyway, okay, so that's good. Making them actually filibuster. You can have the filibuster, but you have to keep 40 people there. And if you ever can't make quorum, then that's it. So if you want to make a big spectacle of it, if you believe that this piece of legislation is terrible and the American people need to know about it, we got to get the media to cover it, so we're going to get 40 people to stand there and read, you know, the Cat in the Hat or whatever, then you can do that as long as you can do that. And then otherwise, we're going to actually pass legislation. That seems like a good idea. A reasonable response to the facts from Joe Biden that, like with Trump, is going to be undercut pretty quickly because he then went on to say this.
I'm not saying this is going to be easy, George, but I do believe there's enough Republicans over time who are going to have, look,
they haven't had that epiphany you said you were going to see in the campaign.
No, well, I've only been here 6 weeks, pal. Okay, give me a break. Been here 6 weeks. I think the epiphany is going to come in between now and 2022. This is one. There's 78% of the people say they support this program. 52% of Republicans. Let's assume it's off by 15%. You're going to go home and campaign. Republican voters want that $1,500 because they're in trouble. Republican voters want to be able to choose between being able to go to work and send their kid to a daycare that they can afford. Republican voters want to be able to take care of a child care tax credit. I mean, it's not like every Republican voter is a billionaire. You know, I'm not saying I'll do it again, but I want those Republican voters in suburbia.
So, JR, they haven't had their epiphany, but it could still come. It could be in the next 2 years because, as we all know, the thing that gets Republicans to work with Democrats is a looming election. That's definitely what's going to lead to it, Joe. Oh, God.
This is inadvertently, I'm not sure if it's purposeful or not, but it's providing cover for Republican politicians versus Republican voters, and on a large scale, whatever. So, or just Republicans in the country, because maybe not necessarily all of them are the voters on it. To say Republican voters want this, Republican voters want that, Republican voters want the third thing. It's fine to say that on those things that they want. Then the problem is you're allowing that to be connected to Republican politicians. Republican voters want these things, Republican politicians don't. It's a perfect opportunity. Be like, look at all these Republican voters that are happy with the stimulus bill, and now law, and the money that could be coming to help them in some whatever way that is needed, right? In multiple different ways. You know who doesn't want that? Republican senators, Republican congressmen, the people that are supposed to represent Republican voters who voted for them. They did their part. Republican politicians are not doing their part in return.
Yeah.
Just point it out. There's a difference. Republican voters want certain things, and Republican politicians don't. They don't represent them. Stop voting for them. If you want what you asked for and you keep not getting it, stop voting for the people who won't give it to you. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, they want certain things, maybe. They don't want nearly as many of the things that would actually benefit them as you might assume, because that would require rationality, which is in short supply in America. They do want some things. That does not mean that they act politically based on that. They still support Republicans. If they Like, they're still Republican voters. That's the problem. And like, are Republican voters better than Republican politicians? Probably, but for how much longer? I mean, by the time 2022 rolls around, there's going to be like 50 million Americans that think that Joe Biden wears long johns made out of baby skin. Like, the voters are getting real bad really fast. So, Joe, bear that in mind. The epiphany probably isn't going to come. And if it does, the Q epiphany probably has already come too.
Okay, how will the epiphany come? That's the next question. Hey, President Biden, when is the epiphany going to come? What's going to trigger it? Because right now it hasn't happened yet. We thought it was going to be Donald Trump being ridiculous and being a clown for 4 years. Hasn't, in fact, it's increased it. What's going to change?
They didn't vote for the COVID bill. Wildly popular. Now, does it make sense that they should turn and vote for a raise to the minimum wage because that's what their voters actually want and it would benefit them? Sure. But they're not going to do it. They didn't do it for the COVID bill. They're not going to do it for these other things. What, to increase voting? Like, yeah, that is really popular. I should probably buck Donald Trump and support that. That's not how anything works.
Oh, man.
But I do want to turn to the other side of this. How, this is how the Democrats are talking about it. Let's talk about how some of the Republicans are talking about it. So the idea that they might reform the filibuster was greeted with a little bit of horror by Ainsley Earhart, who had this to say about it.
They end the filibuster. Mm-hmm. The Democrats will rule our country forever. We will become a socialist country. So first they'll kill the filibuster. Then they'll pass this HR1. So felons can vote, no ID if you go to vote, register everybody, expand the mail-in ballots. Then guess what? They're going to start packing the court. The country's gone. It's a free-for-all if this happens. Thankfully, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema are pushing back on this. They have said that they will not support this, but if they change their minds, it's over.
Yeah, and I don't take that as a foregone conclusion that they will change their minds. But JR, what do you think about, is it over? Is it the end? If they make people actually filibuster to filibuster?
I think they're going to want to gloss over that one change being you have to actually filibuster because you're going to look even more ridiculous than normal in saying, well, I think they should be able to just raise their hand and say no. So they're going to gloss over that and say that the filibuster reform that people like President Biden and Joe Manchin are pitching to have them actually speak. They're mischaracterizing that to them saying they're trying to eliminate the filibuster. So anything that comes to reforming the filibuster to being a filibuster again is saying they want to eliminate it, which they're nowhere near on board for. But they have to mischaracterize that for their audience to have some kind of anger because their audience would go, wait, so you're advocating for them to have to actually do the filibuster when they say they're filibustering? It's hard to get on board with such a ridiculous request. So you have to magnify lie and say what they're shooting for is to eliminate the filibuster because so many other Democrats and progressives want to do so.
You know what we should do? We should make a microfilm, a reboot of Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where a senator stands up with the filibuster. It will be 7 seconds long. He's like, no, I don't want to do that. Roll credits. We should do a remake. I think it would be awesome. Anyway, the world isn't going to be over. I love how much doesn't need to be explained on Fox News because they dwell in the Fox cinematic universe. She says they're going to let felons vote. They don't even have to explain. Wait, so why shouldn't they be able to vote? Like philosophically, exactly. Like what's the reason that they, you're not going to explain it? You know that I know that I don't want them to. So, okay, that's good. Mail-in ballots being expanded. It's over. It's done. Wait, why? Like we've had them. Remember, like we went over the facts like a billion times. Republican states have had mail-in ballots for like years and years and years and years. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that elections don't count. Anyway, I think, look, here's the thing. In theory, she could be right. If the Dems got rid of the filibuster, and the magic element would be, and we're willing to pass legislation that progressives support, that would be so popular that they'd probably win every election until the Republicans eventually adapt. That part isn't necessarily going to happen. And the getting rid of the filibuster almost certainly isn't going to happen. But if those things did happen, then sure, maybe they would rule for all time. We're still a pretty long way off.
Yeah, they want to say that Democrats would rule for all time because, you know, they'd rig the system to make sure that the majority of the country that supports them votes for them. It's such a weird concept. But actually, if the policies, like you said, if the policies progressive, the actual policies were put in place that helped Americans, once they're in place, it's hard to get rid of them. They can fight against, again, I was bringing up, what was healthcare even before the ACA was beaten and badgered and barely dragged across the finish line. It was nothing.
It was basically nothing.
Their Republicans' arguments against any kind of health care was that, hey, you got emergency rooms, bro. That was, they said, who doesn't have access to doctors? Go to the emergency room. That was their argument for keeping the healthcare system the way that it was nationwide, you know? So now that that's changed to this degree and people have this sense of, hey, maybe I can actually have some level of health insurance that isn't just nothing, even though it's still not enough. Mm-hmm. Now it's hard to take that back. You notice they've been fighting so hard to take it back, and they haven't been able to take that back because it's actually in place and it's actually helped people. Now they can't do it anymore because they look like the really bad guys. Exactly. So put things in place, but in order to put it in place, you have to go ahead and get through your legislative process, and that's what the filibuster is holding up.
Exactly. Do you remember back when Justice Kavanaugh was facing the confirmation battle and we found out all this bad stuff about him and they did this investigation into him? And at the time it seemed like, wow, that was really fast and didn't seem like they investigated anything. Well, it turns out now that it was really fast and they didn't really investigate anything. And thankfully there are some senators that are pushing for maybe a bit of a redo considering the incredibly important lifetime appointment he got. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse is calling on the newly confirmed Attorney General, Merrick Garland, to help facilitate proper oversight by the Senate into questions about how thorough the FBI investigated Kavanaugh. The FBI was called at the time to investigate the allegations made by Christine Blasey Ford during the Senate confirmation process, but was later accused by some Democratic senators of conducting an incomplete background check. For example, two key witnesses, Ford and Kavanaugh, were never interviewed as part of the inquiry. Let me repeat that. Wait, let me define terms just so that you get how important that is. So the two people they didn't talk to were the one who made the allegations and the one who was alleged to have done it. They didn't talk to either of those people. That's like I come home, there's toilet paper everywhere, and my dog's in the middle of it. I'm going to look into this, but not into the toilet paper or my dog. Well, then I'm probably not going to find out much that's going to really bear on what actually happened there, JR.
You know what you'll do is you'll ask your wife, who's also coming home from work, and you'll be like, what happened? And she'll be like, I don't know. And you'll be like, okay, so my investigation has concluded that we don't know what happened. The witness that I asked doesn't know.
Exactly. And, you know, it goes beyond that. So among the concerns listed are allegations that some witnesses who wanted to share their accounts with the FBI couldn't find anyone at the Bureau who would accept their testimony, and that it had not assigned any individual to accept or gather evidence. I mean, that feels like all that you should need to know. They didn't have anyone who was gathering evidence in an investigation, the purpose of which is to gather evidence. Anyway, White House says this was unique behavior in my experience, as the Bureau is usually amenable to information and evidence. But in this matter, the shutters were closed, the drawbridge drawn up, and there was no point of entry by which members of the public or Congress could provide information to the FBI. So they didn't talk to anyone involved in this. Anyone who wanted to come in and provide information found that there was no one to provide it for. This is not a background check. And this was used, by the way, JR, as part of the, hey, he's been cleared, it's cool to vote for him now.
This is the whole, like, you guys came for Kavanaugh, and then we looked into it. It's incredible evidence put forward about what actually happened. It should be clear. Anybody who complains about this further is now just trying to smear this guy because you just hate him and you hate the politics and the policies of Donald Trump and what Mitch McConnell did with the last Supreme Court nomination under Obama. So, you push all that as your legitimate reasoning for why you went this route. You come to find out all your legitimate reasoning was based off of BS. And it was and planned. This wasn't accidental. It wasn't like, oh, we overlooked it. Oh, we forgot. Oh, we didn't realize that witnesses were a thing that could come to us. All those things are can't be based in any kind of reality. You can watch any kind of ridiculous crime show and know that if a witness comes forward, I do think that the police want to know about it, even if it ends up not being credible. You think they just don't talk to people before they come in because they just know they're not going to be credible? Doesn't make any sense, man. They always put out like rewards and crime stoppers. If you have any evidence, come forward, come talk to us. They want people to come talk. Why is it in this situation they didn't want anyone to come talk? It's so weird. It's like they're not the police.
Yeah. Probably an important time to remind people that it is part of the Constitution that a Supreme Court justice could be impeached if it turns out that the process that put them in was incredibly fraudulent. And it was designed not only, by the way, and perhaps most importantly, to shield him from all of the potential sexual assault charges and all of that, but also the financial charges, because I don't want to go into the entire thing once again, but a bunch of his debts sort of disappeared in the run up to him becoming a judge. And everyone just sort of forgot about that. So this wasn't actually looked into. So it at base has to be looked into and potentially could be used as a rationale to impeach him. Now, this doesn't generally happen. It hasn't happened in hundreds of years, but it's not impossible, especially considering that, as Mimosa Dragon pointed out on Twitch, they looked into him the way Tucker Carlson looked into Q. They couldn't even find Kavanaugh's website.
Hey, so I'm just curious, John, what's your level of, I guess, belief that this would actually come up with anything where they would then say, hey, we need to do something about this. We need to look into the confirmation of Kavanaugh and if they're going to impeach him, all those things that you said are possibilities. What do you think is the potential for that happening? Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they could find out that he'd, you know, like slaughter dozens of women, you know, throughout the 70s in the Pacific Northwest, and they wouldn't impeach him. The Republicans wouldn't. They'd probably start a GoFundMe for him, actually, and give him some sort of coffee sponsorship. Yeah. But anyway, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't know. We should know what these people have done. Like, they are among the most powerful individual people in the entire world. We should understand who they are and what they've done. If for no other reason that the people who made the accusations want people to know what happened. They deserve that respect. An investigation is a show of respect.
Honestly, and it's why the angry PR battle over this would make this not go further, because it would almost be wrongfully embarrassing for anyone to bring this up and then say we're going to have to go through an impeachment process because of what happened during this confirmation. Because during all that, they fought so hard and said, look at all these fraudulent, meaningless charges that you have against him. If you bring it up again now, they're going to be like, look, they're back again. You can ignore the facts as long as you keep going with the emotional response that you already built up throughout this whole thing. I mean, Lindsey Graham screaming at the confirmation hearings and stuff. So all that's going to be remembered. The facts are always the things that are quickly forgotten.
Yeah. As Virgie Verge points out, the only good thing to come from that entire process was that SNL sketch. Anyway, with an amazing portrayal of Lindsey Graham. Anyway, okay, so we have very little time, so we're going to roll through immediately into our final topic. We've pointed out quite a bit of the good that was in the recent COVID aid bill, but there's some that perhaps we haven't talked enough about, especially because if you hear about it, you're probably going to hear about it from the right wing, who is losing their minds about this particular component of it. And that is that in the $1.9 trillion coronavirus stimulus bill, about $5 billion were provided that will go towards forgiving debts of minority farmers in an attempt to repair historical racist discrimination on the federal level. And that is enough for them to completely lose it. And so, you know, sometimes in a pretty simple form, people like Todd Starnes tweeting, farmers of color, which he puts in quotation marks. Are they not farmers? Are they not of color? Which part of that do you have a problem with? Says gets $4 billion bailout to pay off their debt. White farmers get nothing. Well, they get the COVID aid since they're Americans. They presumably get that. But then he says it's reparations, but it's not. It's racism. Pay your bills, America. First of all, they didn't say that it's reparations.
Say, who says that?
Who said that? The right? But yeah, the white farmers got all of the rest of the aid in the bill. Oh, and also the history of inequitable transfer of funds to farmers, primarily only farmers who are white. So that's the tweet form. Maybe even worse is Brian Kilmeade immediately raced to bring on a white farmer, and this is what they had to say about it.
How shocked were you to find that the color of your skin would be working against you when it came to your job?
Well, it was pretty disappointing. I thought all farmers would be treated equally.
Right here, I guess it's a form of reparations. Were, in your estimation, minority farmers being discriminated against?
Yes. Well, I'm not a racist person to start off with, but I don't think it's... I've worked all my life and worked very hard and to get where I'm at, and I didn't get no breaks like that. And I don't think that they should get breaks like that, not saying they don't deserve it, not to release or, you know, just to wipe out their debt. Well, y'all, debt-free, that's not right.
Okay. To his credit, I guess, when asked if they're discriminated against, he started by saying yes, and then immediately turned to, I'm not racist. But JR, Kilmeade asked a great question. He said, can you imagine what it would be like, how shocking it would be like for your skin color to work against you at your job? It's crazy. How could anyone imagine something like that, JR?
We can't imagine it. And I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. And by the way, this isn't applied to Brian Kilmeade and people like him, because he knows the advantages that America gives to certain folks historically. So he's just playing the role. But imagine the horror. Imagine if there's an institutional, systematic way that you keep certain people from having opportunities in this country that they built. That'd be crazy, huh? Based off of your name, skin tone, where you're from. Your previous jobs, any of that stuff, anything about you, first of all, primarily your name, we've seen things like that. Imagine being rejected from a job because of just who you are. It happens so much. And then when people try to fix that, you know what they get pushback from? People saying, oh, bootstraps. When is this white farmer going to pull himself up by his bootstraps? Why is he complaining about someone else's money? Hey, you didn't get the money. Stop complaining. What do you want, a government handout? You're going to keep sucking off the government teat? What's the matter with you? You freeloading welfare queens. There's way too much obvious a background to the way that things have always been done here to certain folks to now claim that it's being like taken out on you. And who called it reparations again? Who's calling reparations? It's ridiculous. And so, by the way, reparations being paying folks back for building the country and not getting paid for it. In fact, getting murdered, separated, slaughtered over this. Yeah. That's what reparations would be. But you're upset about that. You know why? Because we want to forget the fact that we built this country based off of slavery and enslaving African folks that we dragged over here and helped build our country. That's what we're trying to avoid having any kind of memory of. We want to make sure that no one remembers that part. We do it with our school curriculum. We do it the way the books and we teach our children. And now we do it on a political level where we make sure we don't want to recognize anything that happened in this country because our founding fathers or above anything and everything. But right now, when finally something's being done to try and even the playing field, which this is by far not enough, to simply do anything to raise any part of who you've already suppressed this long, that's a problem now. Now we got discrimination. Now we have to imagine what it's like to be living in a racist society. Welcome to America, bro.
Exactly. Well, go a little bit easy on him. I know that you want him to, you know, use his bootstraps, but he can't reach them because they're blocked by the hands of every former president. But anyway, who's lifting them up? But and look, I know from his point of view, he thinks, well, look, I didn't pass that legislation that benefited historically white farmers. But that's why he is not the person that you bring on to talk about this. He has no understanding and seems like little curiosity understanding how white privilege or structural racism actually exists. Again, it doesn't require you as an individual to do it for it to be a problem. You can have not done anything specific, and yet the system is still effed up in a lot of different ways that need to be fixed. So what you could do is bring on someone who actually understands this stuff, has worked on it, has done research on these things, which we will quickly summarize. So black farmers in America have lost more than 12 million acres of farmland over the past century, mostly since the 1950s, a result of what agricultural experts and advocates for black farmers say is a combination of systemic racism, biased government policy, and social and business practices that have denied African Americans equitable access to markets. Discrimination started a century ago with a series of federal homestead acts that offered mainly white settlers deeply subsidized land. Since then, local U.S. Department of Agriculture offices charged with distributing loans have frequently been found to deny black farmers access to credit and to ignore or delay loan applications. So whether that individual farmer thinks that he, as a white farmer, has been benefited, that was the official government policy for decades and decades and decades that gave them a leg up, provided easy, cheap access to land as well as credit. This is just trying, and it's not going to, as JR pointed out, actually fix the inequity. It is trying to put some of these farmers who've been so abused by the US government on something kind of within sight of equal footing. That's all it's doing. But you wouldn't know that from that segment on Fox, because they just brought on a white farmer to say, they're not being fair to me, I'm white, it's so tough to be white in America.
Because if you brought on someone who knew the situation, they may bring up the fact that all these facts you just broke down, with the 12 million acres of farmland being lost and black farmers being denied loans just because of who they are, all these things that were happening to folks. If you actually have someone talk about it, then the people who are pushing all of this hate and misinformation would have to actually answer back and be like, Brian, are you okay with the fact that 12 million acres of farmland have been taken from black farmers, or that their loans applicants that have been denied or delayed just because of who they are? Are you okay with that? Because you're arguing on the side that's okay with that. They won't bring those things up, because then they have to attach themselves to the reality of the negativity that's been perpetuated forever in this country. So now, as long as you don't tell the whole story, you can then have this outrage about the result of the problem. We don't have to talk about the first problem. Let's just get mad about the result. A small change. This is a tiny change. $5 billion is nothing from what they've taken from these farmers over all these years. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. We're mad about that to make sure that nothing else happens their way in the future. And the reason, and you're going to go to this, almost cussed, you're going to go to this guy next, because it's people like this that they give everyone else the mindset to then feel it's okay to mistreat and abuse, and then after something happens, call them welfare queens for getting something.
Then let's do it. The COVID aid bill includes some money that's intended to provide aid to minority farmers to get rid of some of their debt as a result of government policy that provided that debt. And the right says that's not necessary because there hasn't been any racism in this area, or at all, but definitely not any racism towards black or brown farmers. And to demonstrate how little racism there is in this area, here is Steven Crowder and his gang of idiots.
About the new policy, these people. So yeah, I'm gonna buy a plow, man. I'm gonna plant that corn. Go get a John Deere. Barack Obama, mother. I'm the president. I'm plowing that head. You.
I thought the last thing they would want to do is be farmers. Wasn't that a big problem for hundreds of years?
Yeah. Isn't that why Arsenio Hall calls himself the urban man's Johnny Carson?
I think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Are people lining up out in the middle of cornfield Iowa for new dunks?
How would you prove this, by the way? Like, how would you prove that you've been discriminated against?
You don't have to. You just
say. Well, I didn't get that loan. Sir, you had no credit. Well, that should not have stopped me from getting the loan.
I planted a Hennessy tree, but it's not growing.
Well, technically, it did grow. But they next oak.
I put it in the ground.
I planted a VSOP XO tree. I'm getting into some niche esoteric cognac humor.
See?
Oh, good job.
There's no racism. There's nothing like that, JR. You don't have to fix a problem if the problem doesn't exist.
Yeah, they never said the N-word, so all that's fine. This is the basis for the way that we like to, it's the basis for the way that we would like to characterize who the racists are in this country, and who the people who are having platforms like this perpetuate and push this kind of racism. This isn't new. This is nowhere new. The minstrel show he's got up there, all he didn't do was slap on some black paint and red lips. It's the only thing he didn't
do. Which he certainly has in the past.
Absolutely. When you think this is all just fun and games and they're just telling a few jokes and what do you know, this is what leads people to believe it's okay to then mistreat folks in policy, in justice, and in the way that you spread things out. So that when things do get changed, you now have somewhere internally, because you've listened to people like this long enough, you go, well, yeah, these black folks have bad credit. That's why they got their loans denied or delayed. Just make that assumption. You know why? Because all black folks are going to do is plant some Hennessy and VSOP. Because it can be over the top enough, because people embedded in their brains, I hate this human being so much, I don't have to consider them being anywhere normal. Yeah, sure, they're so dumb. What was the dunking line in Miller Corn? What is he talking about?
I don't know. I doubt he knows either.
It doesn't matter. As long as the hate is there, that's all. That's the end of the game.
And that's all that was there. So let's enter this in as the most recent exhibit in the are conservatives conservative because of economic anxiety or racism? Well, I don't know for sure, but I can tell which they think it is. Are they trying to appeal to the economically anxious? Or are they trying to appeal to racists? Right. Which do you think? Again, judge them based on their choices. When Tucker does a segment, or when whatever the hell that was, which were they targeting with their content? And it's pretty clear. You know what conservatives really love, by the way? Dumb rhetorical questions that are rhetorical, not in that they can't be answered, but only in that they have no interest in actually answering them. So when the guy, I don't know who they are, said, how would you even show that? Well, like, you could do some research. We showed you. It wasn't hard. You could find information about loans being denied and all of that. You could actually find that information if you're curious about the world, rather than just, you know, putting out stupid rhetorical questions. And I want to point out, there was a commenter on Twitter who alluded to this, but the idea is, remember that racism is an actual issue. The only major crisis facing America is cancel culture, because cancel culture ruins everything. And in particular, it ruins comedy. Comedians are constantly talking about cancel culture. And what happens is cancel culture comes in and it makes comics bad, because now they can't talk about things. But not there. That is a cancel culture free zone, which is why comedy has flourished and has advanced into new forms. I mean, he's really pushing boundaries. He made a joke about how black people like dunking and they drink Hennessy. That is the sort of groundbreaking comedy that only comes from stopping cancel culture people from getting involved. Ugh. Can you imagine being in that room? That sad, sad room of these really sad white men that so want to be cool. They so badly want to be cool, and they don't even know how to do it.
And the worst part is after all those rants, they'll encounter a black person and then start talking to them like they like them. Happens all the time. So the whole thing, I have a best friend that's black. Oh man, I got black friends, all that stuff, because the things that people like to say they think is funny and behind closed doors are things like this. And then afterwards, they like to claim in society, oh yeah, I'm just this normal guy. I was just making a couple of jokes. Hey, would you make those jokes on a serious level when we're actually talking about something that changed people's lives? Because what you're trying to do is put forward the fact that these folks don't deserve it. Someone else does. That changes people's lives. So these are no longer jokes. These are trying to influence the way policies actually go are implemented. And it's worked so far. Because again, this isn't new. Minstrel shows were always there. And people go, what's wrong with blackface? It doesn't happen anymore. It absolutely still happens. 100%. And it helps steal the humanity from certain people. And I know I've said it three times now, but it needs to be said over and over and over again. People don't think someone who is not really at their level, as far as a humanitarian level, doesn't deserve anything, doesn't deserve life. So why would they deserve $5 billion in subsidies for the work they do? Whatever. Ugh,
sad country full of sad people. Anyway, JR, thank you as always for joining us. Great to have you. It was a rough day of news, but glad to have you here.
It's just my last thought on this guy. It's this is just my approach, and maybe it's wrong. I 100% ignore people like this. I would have never mentioned Steven Crowder's name today. I wouldn't have mentioned his stupid ass segment today. I wouldn't have gone over any of the stuff he said, because he doesn't deserve any of that. He doesn't deserve my mind. He doesn't deserve my attention. He doesn't deserve my anger, because I already knew who he was. This isn't new. You knew who he was.
You're probably right.
But not to have a problem with people who wanted to talk about it, because he needs to be exposed. He doesn't deserve my energy. Put it that way. Ironically, I'm better than him.
Well, you know who does deserve your energy? Us in the audience. We were glad to have you for today, and hope that the rest of your day a little bit easier.
Thank you, JR. You love it, John. Thanks, you guys. Sorry for going overseas. Sure will.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.